Hey everybody, this is Michael and you're listening to Conversations with a Recovering Loan Officer, the show that is designed to help loan officers grow their mortgage business. We talk to top producers, marketing experts, and other inspiring people whose experience can help you reach your goals in less time.
Being ostracized by your tribe meant death. I would have never thought that I could do a $50,000 wire.
Your consumer direct marketing strategies or strategies, and you've got your kind of referral-based strategies.
You use my least favorite word in the English dictionary, motivation. Nobody's motivated to make these calls. I coach this. I write down the people every Sunday night who I want to call, so I kind of have my first 20 calls. Average household income in America right now is like $67,000. They make around $300,000 to $350,000 a year. Who was working with a realtor that you really want to work with, but it was their cousin and their golf partner, they're going to leave the industry.
Hey guys, Michael here from Conversations with a Recovering Loan Officer, and I'm joined today by Scott Groves, who is a warrior in the field, just like you guys, loan officer, and he's doing it, making it happen in this market. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and let's go from there.
Yeah, you know, everybody's heard Batman's origin story way too many times. We all know how he became Batman, right? We all know how any loan officer has been doing this 20 plus years, how it happened. Fell into it in 2000. I fell into it after I got out of the Army. Nobody plans to be a loan officer, right? I failed as a personal banker because I was always out of balance on my cash drawer. So they promoted me, of course, to a loan officer. So became a loan officer, went broke in 2008 like everybody else, should have declared bankruptcy, but let my ego get in the way. And so basically spent my 30s paying off, you know, $1 million in bad debt. And back in like 2010-ish, just really got passionate about lead generation as a way to double my business. Mm. So every year from like 2010 to 2014, doubled my business, hit just shy of $100 million in 2014. That led to starting a coaching program because people were wondering what we were doing, you know, how we were growing this successful market. And then that coaching business led to writing this book, Lead Generate, 61 Days to Double Your Pay. That led to more coaching engagements. That led to speaking engagements. So fast forward to 2023, happily married, three kids, still doing loans. Used to be able to say I was a $100 million producer. This year, it's going to be more around $40 million because 2023 has been a real kick in the nuts. But still doing loans on a daily basis. Still run a coaching program where we coach about 200 loan officers. And then back there, my family and my podcast and jiu-jitsu, about the only other things I care about. So I've got time for family, podcast, jiu-jitsu, loan officer, and coaching, and I don't sleep a whole lot. So yeah,
that's trend.
That's the story of Scott Groves.
Love it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, so that's great. So when you're talking about lead generation, right, I think you hear a lot today. I think there's generally like two schools of thought. You've got your consumer direct marketing strategies or strategies, and you've got your kind of referral-based strategies. You know, and maybe both are right, but right. Give me your opinion on those categories.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think both are right. Like every month, I send out a free package of graphics to all the Facebook groups I'm in where your search for a home starts with a lender, because the companies, the trade unions, the CEOs, they're not all willing to get together and talk to each other. They want to continue to have these pissing contests over who's better and who's got a better company and which channel is better. Where I'm like, hey man, if we would put all that energy into changing the consumer dynamic of your search for a home starts with a lender, like we could be the ones who control the initial conversation, right? So I think it's both. I still highly value my realtors. I still have my, I'm going to throw all my paperwork off. I still have my connection tracker here where I'm trying to connect with 10 realtors a day, have some type of relationship building or relationship deepening conversation, 10 a day, every day with realtors. That's still important. And if you're doing any type of marketing, social media, brand awareness, you've got to be willing to convert on consumer direct. Not only because we're probably doing a better job staying in front of them than the realtors, we probably run our business more professionally and in sync than a lot of realtors. But if we can control that lead up front and put that deal into a realtor's pocket, you know, I just referred a client over to a realtor for $1.5 million at a 3% commission. You know, that realtor is going to get $45,000. They're a capper at Keller Williams. So 100% of that is going to go into their pocket. Like you give an agent $45,000, they'll give you a lot of grace on you know, documents getting delayed or the client being a little frustrated over conditions. So I think it's both. I think we need to still be going after those tried and true referral partners, divorce attorneys, CPAs, financial professionals, realtors, lots of realtors that are, you know, have a chance of surviving. And we've got to think about consumer direct. You know, I go to a jiu-jitsu studio that's huge. It's one of the biggest ones in the country. They have 500 members. And I've got a big sticker on my giant water bottle that says, mortgage professional, ask me any question you want about finances. And I've probably gotten a half dozen loans over the last 12 months from just people at jiu-jitsu being like, hey man, are you a realtor? I'm thinking about buying a house. I'm like, no, I'm actually a lender. But the funny thing is, your search for a home should start with a lender because we can help you figure out the finances before you start looking at open houses. And they're like, oh, cool. Can we schedule an appointment? Right. And so it's both. It's both. It doesn't have to be an either or. It's definitely a both.
Yeah, that's great. And so like that, just that little product placement in an area where there's high traffic has generated you $15,000 or $20,000 in revenue.
That's
a game changer in this market.
Yeah, our average loan size, I kind of serve two markets here in Vegas and in LA. In LA, my average loan size is like $980,000. In Vegas, it's about $480,000. So five of those deals can come from Vegas, one from LA. They're about 500 grand each. So 3 million times 100 bips. Yeah, $30,000 in pocket to my bottom line just by having a sticker on a water bottle. Like you know, there's so many little ways like this that we're not reaching out. I have this curriculum that I teach in my coaching program called Famous with 50, where if you're just famous with 50 people who you surround yourself with, who bring up your name anytime the conversation about real estate or finance comes up, that's enough to make 250 grand. Like, I'm way underperforming expectations. I got my goal chart over there. I'm not going to hit anywhere near the $100 million in loans I wanted to fund this month. But to have a bad year and know for certain that our family is going to make $250,000 in mortgage production revenue is bonkers, right? And that's just from staying in front of like 50 key people. And it's a whole training that we do. But I think people are like, oh my God, if I only knew everything about AI or Instagram Reels or whatever. It's like, no, dude. You just got to stay famous with the people that are already in your circle and make sure every time the conversation of finance, real estate, or mortgage comes up, your name gets dropped. Your card gets given out digitally these days, obviously. Somebody makes an introduction to a text message. Like, I love nothing more than getting off the plane. I just flew back from Maine. I was there for 10 days for a jiu-jitsu camp. I got off the plane from Maine and I had three text messages that was like, hey, Scott, this is Joby. We don't really do business together, but my friend has a question about mortgages. Can you help them out? And it's like, great. These are just more conversations to have that will hopefully lead to deals.
So those 50 people, are they like specific types of people? Are they referral partners? Are those consumers? Could it be just anybody?
Yeah. I mean, they can be anybody, right? The stepfather of one of my ex-girlfriends is a great referral source for me because we've stayed in touch. I was super close with him, much closer with him than I was his daughter, hence the reason she's my ex. And he's, you know, older and retired and wealthy, but he just wants to see me win. Like, we've stayed close. We've had conversations about finances. And, you know, when his nephew needs to buy a house in Idaho because they're moving out of state, I get the referral. When he's got one of the receptionists at his old medical practice who wants to buy a house and they call him for financial advice, I get a referral, right? So, you know, you just find these 50 people that want to see you win and are in a place or a situation where they'll be having financial conversations. You know, I've seen people go out and spend $2,500 on a Instagram Reel course or something like that, and they've never gotten a referral from their CPA or their insurance agent or their pool cleaner or their maid. Like, you're giving all of these people money every year. You need to have a conversation with them about reciprocating that and getting a deal back into your world, right? And people are like, well, I feel kind of weird having a conversation with my insurance agent about sending me deals. So I'm going to spend $2,500 on this program and try to go become a social media expert. I'm like, really? That's easier than just calling your insurance agent and be like, hey, I've been paying you $4,000 a year for 10 years for all the insurances on my car and house. I'd really like to have a conversation with you and take you out to lunch to talk about how you could refer me some refinances the next time the market changes and interest rates drop. You know, it's just like those conversations are so much easier to have than becoming a LinkedIn expert.
Is it like a fear-based mindset that stops people from going after and like having real conversations with people versus just trying to do something in front of a screen or like post something and then hope that they see that and are so wowed by the value that they start referring you deals?
Yeah, which, by the way, has never happened in the history of the world, because there's nothing sexy enough about mortgages or impulsive enough about mortgages. We're like, I buy shit all the time off of Instagram. I actually bought like a new set of like training knives and like this knife, which is like a training knife. It's not sharp because like Instagram showed me how I could become a knife expert. But this is like $35, right? And it was like a low barrier to entry. There's no long-term consequences of wasting $35 on a training knife on Instagram. But there is long-term consequences of making the bad financial decision of getting a bad mortgage, right? And so nobody's just going to impulsively pick like, ooh, Michael, I really like that hat. And I loved your background on your podcast and your Instagram reel was so kitschy. I want to work with you. It's like, that's not really how it works. So I think there's two reasons people don't make the calls and have those conversations, whether it's calling the realtors, right? Or whether it's having those conversations with those 50 people. There's two reasons we don't make the calls. And let's go over them like subconsciously and consciously. So subconsciously, somewhere back here in our lizard brain, you got to think like, I mean, 100,000 years ago for sure, but even a couple hundred years ago, being ostracized by your tribe meant death. It really did. Like if you go back anywhere from like caveman up to about 1700, if you pissed off the tribe, if you were ostracized from your tribe, I mean, we're not that far removed from like human beings spending 70% of their day just trying to farm or gather enough calories to stay alive. And so screwing up and having your tribe say no, or having your tribe say, no, I disagree with you, that was exile from the tribe and that was death. Human beings, just through evolution, like we really bias towards acceptance, right? It's why when you're walking by somebody, if you smile at them, they smile back at you. Just try it. Like when you're walking through the mall, just look somebody dead in the eyes and smile at them. Like 95% of the time, they'll smile back at you because we just have this desire to be part of the tribe and be accepted and survive, right? It makes sense. And so when you think about making the calls, the idea of hearing no, somewhere back here in our subconscious and our lizard brain through evolution, in our mind somewhere, hearing no and getting rejected by the tribe is like equal to death. I mean, it sounds crazy, and I know I'm sounding like a little melodramatic, but that's really how like our brain works. Because for, depending on what you believe, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of years, it was like if you got ostracized from the tribe by hearing no or offending somebody, you died. And so now when you think about sales calls, there's this constant fear, analysis, paralysis, subconscious brain telling you like, no, don't, you know, if you hear no, if you make 20 sales calls and 19 people say no, that means you died 19 out of 20 times, right?
Right.
And so people really have to trick their subconscious to be like, no, this is just a call that's going to be either a net positive, we're going to deepen the relationship, we're going to get a lead, we're going to like, you know, leave a good message, or it's going to be neutral. Because if they say, no, I don't want to work with you, they already weren't working with me, so I didn't lose anything, right? And so we got to get over that subconscious. And then consciously, I get it. Because we know we do a good job, right? We know as loan officers, we pull a rabbit out of our hat and we cram a square peg into a round hole. And even though we're not responsible for everything, the loan officer is the repository of all of the cogs in the wheel. We're coordinating the insurance. We're working with title and escrow. We are the cog that holds the deal together. Now, ton of respect for realtors, because I could not drive a client around for 6 months trying to get them to fall in love with a house. So they have a very tough job on their own. But once the deal goes live, we know in our heart of hearts, and I think the realtor knows in their heart of hearts, the deal is either made or broke through the efforts of the loan officer. And so consciously, there's a little bit of this ego that gets in the way of like, dude, why do I have to call these realtors and beg for their business? Do they not know how many deals I've held together? Like I've pulled a rabbit out of my hat for this realtor 7 times and put $100,000 of commission in their pocket. Why do I have to call them every Tuesday and give them a status update on the deal when they know that we're closer? So that's kind of our conscious brain tricking us into not wanting to make the call. So we've got the like subconscious fear, we've got the conscious ego, and it just leads to us looking at this sheet being like, I'm going to go play on social media and pretend like I'm doing marketing and branding because I don't want to make the calls, which is absolutely understandable and absolutely crazy all at the same time.
Yeah. So you said like, you actually mentioned something that's really interesting. You said, you know, these realtors don't know that I put $100,000 in the pocket of this realtor and held these seven deals together. That sounds like a case study that you should be building as a marketing strategy, right? I mean, how do you leverage your time in marketing to grow your business and something like that?
So a good question. And I think of a couple of things. And one of the first distinctions is, I mean, multi-million dollar Fortune 500 companies accidentally lump marketing and lead generation together and they just call it marketing, and it's not. So marketing is brand awareness, right? Like nobody is watching the Super Bowl and they see a commercial for Gillette razors and then they rush out to the store to ignore the second half of the Super Bowl to buy a Gillette razor. Like that's not lead generation. They're not putting dollars in their pocket at that moment. There's no call to action on the stream. Go to Gillette.com and buy 7 razors right now for the price of 5 or whatever, right? That's not lead generation. That's marketing and branding. Mm-hmm. And when you're a multi-billion dollar company that has shelf space and people are then going to be walking through the grocery store on Wednesday and they're going to see Gillette versus whatever, Schick, and they're like, oh, I'm going to reach for the Gillette. I don't really know why, but subconsciously, like I resonate with that brand. That's marketing and branding. The lead generation is Gillette putting a coupon on the end of the end cap at the grocery store saying, you know, buy 2 razors for the price of 1, like put it in your cart right now and buy. And what happens with loan officers is we screw up this distinction all the time where it's like, oh, we're putting our branding out there. We're putting up videos on social media. We're doing this stuff. It's like, okay, but are you actually doing the lead generation that will put the deals in your pocket? I think when we talk about marketing, we have to really be thinking like, I put out a ton of content, you know, it's how you and I got introduced. I put out a ton of content, but anytime somebody comments on that content, I then hit them up, you know, either in the DMs or in public by responding to their comment on like, hey, tell me more about that. Hey, did you need some help with that? Hey, should we schedule an appointment? Hey, here's my Calendly link. Like people are probably sick of getting my Calendly link on DMs because when they interact with my mortgage stuff, I'm like, hey man, thanks for watching that reel and leaving a comment. If you ever need to get on my calendar to talk about getting a mortgage, you know, here's a link to where you can have full access to my calendar. Let me know if you have any financial questions. So I think that marketing, branding, lead generation conversation gets bastardized. And I think we need to, as professionals, you know, I've got time on my calendar, a couple hours a month to film all my like tall videos for Instagram, right? But then I've also got an hour a day on my calendar to say, okay, this is when I do lead generation. This is when I make the calls. If my voice is out or I just don't have the energy to make the calls, I go on Instagram not to scroll endlessly, but to correspond with every single person that's interacted with my content, send them a DM reminding them that I do mortgages. And then this is the virtuous cycle of the guy at Jiu-Jitsu sees the sticker on my water bottle, follows me on Instagram, sees a mortgage reel. Now, if I hit them up at that moment in time in the DMs and say, hey, who's most recently? Adam, this guy at the gym, we're going to have lunch this week. You know, Adam has seen my water bottle. We've had conversations about what I do for a living. He's then seen the branding and marketing, and I planted a seed somewhere of like, oh, you don't need 20% down. So he just texted me this weekend. Hey, man, I think it's time. Could we have a conversation? Because I think I've got 10% down for a house I saw online. Cool. Let's go have lunch. Let's sketch out the numbers. Now, you know, the reality is he's a pro fighter. So I don't know what his tax returns looks like. He might need to come up with 30% down so he can do like a DSCR loan or some 1-year tax returns or whatever, bank statement loan or something like that. But the conversations are happening because we did the branding and the marketing, but more importantly, we did the lead generation to actually get butts in seats and sell products.
Yep. So to summarize, marketing is like your brand awareness and like your sort of like your incubator where you're warming them up to the idea of who you are, making them comfortable with you so that when the time comes and you hit them with a call to action, there's no hesitation, right? They're like, boom, this is the guy. Because I'm ready now. And so that would be your lead generation. That would be that point when they reach out to you.
My friend Tim Chermak, who runs a marketing company called Platform for Realtors, he calls it high-hanging fruit. He goes, you know, by the time it's low-hanging fruit or the fruit's on the ground, those people have filled out an application on Zillow. They've talked to 5 they are getting bombarded, right? And like, I'm good, but I'm not that good. What's the chance that I'm going to stand out as the winner if 13 loan officers are hitting you and Google and the $100 million marketing budget of Quicken and Rocket Mortgage? And like, I'm good. I'm not that good. You know, I'm decent looking. I'm not that good looking. So it's like, what are the chances that if I'm going after the low-lying fruit, that I'm going to pick up those deals? You know, it's a fool's errand and it's a race to the bottom and it's a fight to the death. But if we can focus our social media and our branding, our marketing on high-hanging fruit, so that by the time the client sees us and wants to interact with us, and more importantly, we go out and interact with them proactively, then they're like, oh yeah, this guy talks about mortgages all the time. And so I think thinking more about high-hanging fruit for the marketing and branding, and then as the fruit starting to mature, right before it hits the low-hanging fruit where everybody's contacting them, that's where you got to be proactive in the DMs, the social media reach out, the drip campaigns, the having conversations in person, because there's nothing worse than having our friend call us and be like, hey man, I'm in the middle of buying a house and I think this lender might be ripping me off. Can you take a look at these documents for me? And I'm like, well, why am I not the lender you're working with? And it's like, well, shame on me. I didn't reach out in a timely manner to nurture that relationship, right?
I had that happen to me early on in my career. My mother-in-law was did a loan with like her, you know, credit union or whatever. You know, what? You know, like I've got your grandkids that like need our money. I mean, it's like, I don't understand that. And so like that person's not going to give you business because you don't remind them you're in the business and you're not providing them some kind of value and marketing yourself even to those people. Then, you know, good luck. I mean, it's a big struggle. You talked about high hanging fruit, and that's an interesting concept that I've really been like challenging myself to solve lately, because there is so much white noise when it comes to other people trying to influence the consumer awareness on mortgages. So like you said, Quicken, Rocket, I mean, they're spending a ton of money. And the way I see it, they're building this lead generation system and they're plugging them into their ecosystem, their Rocket Money, their Rocket Mortgage, their Rocket, you know, all this stuff. And at some point, companies like that are going to control, in my opinion, they're going to control the consumer's mindset around mortgage.
Yep.
So as a loan officer, how do you compete with that? How do you compete with those companies that are building those ecosystems and controlling that group of people so that when they're thinking about any financial service, they're going through their, you know, Rocket Money, their system they've been plugged into?
I'm going to steal this directly from my coach, John Israel, which you'll have to tag him in these videos or whatnot. John Israel is he's an amazing personal coach for me. And then he has some great keynotes on standing out in a crowded market, working with iBuyers, you know, working and positioning yourself against the technology, right? So it's like eventually Rocket Mortgage, see, people get pissed off at Rocket Mortgage because they're like, oh, you can't just click a button and get a mortgage. It's like, no, what you're missing, loan officers, is that they're trying to change the consumer behavior where, you know, it was just 10 years ago, I would have never thought that I could do a $50,000 wire from online banking, right? It's 20 years ago, my mom would have thought, what do you mean I have to go to this ATM machine? Oh, I have to go into the bank to get my money, right? And so Rocket's just trying to change the consumer behavior so that the 50% of, you know, mortgage clients who can get DU approval, day one certainty, effectively a click button get mortgage, they can capture all of those mortgages that they can by changing consumer behavior, right? So like, don't hate the player, hate the game, right? Like they're just doing the same thing that every bank institution has been trying to work towards for 40 years, which is eliminate the highest cost, AKA the human, and then get the consumer to understand that they can do everything automated, right? So like, this is what financial services industries, what the banks, it's what they've all been doing, right? And so John Israel has this framework, he calls it LEAD, and it's LEAD. So the way that we can stand out as actual humans, as actual advisors, as somebody people might want to work with, we have to lead. So we lead, advocate, educate, and delight. So you have to lead the client, you have to educate them, you have to advocate for them, and you have to delight or entertain them, right? And so in some way, you have to pick out, you know, like, what's her name? The bird lady, the mortgage nerd. She has leaned in hard to education. All of her social media is about education, education, education. She does great social media. You know, she's beautiful. She's super knowledgeable. She presents well on social media. So it's like she's just putting out nonstop education. And that's how she's differentiating herself from the market, right? There's other people like me, for example. Every time I'm talking to a client, whether I feel like they're going to be a rate shopper or they're asking those leading questions where I know that they're going to go talk to other lenders, I lean deep into that advocacy role, right? And I'm going to advocate for you. Hey, I've been in the same market area for 23 years. I know all the listing agents. I can call like, look, if somebody offers $50,000 more, I'm not that valuable. But if it's in the ballpark, we're going to get the offer accepted because I know these people, they know my track record of business, and I can be your advocate, right? So I lead hard into the advocacy. For my loan officers that love working with like brand new realtors, they've got to lead the client through the transaction. They've got to make it entertaining enough by delighting them to basically do the job that the realtor should be doing, but they're not seasoned enough to know what they don't know, right? And so that lead, educate, advocate, and delight, you've got to be working those into your social media. You got to be working those into your drip campaigns. You got to be working those into how you talk to your client. Because if you can do that, you can easily stand apart from the, you know, like rocket, pick one from column A, one from column B, and we'll see if we can click your way through a mortgage. But it's got to be strategic. You know, I've got a buddy, he does not allow his clients to go to an online application because he goes, if I'm not taking the application and building the rapport, then why do they need me? Why wouldn't they go to Rocket? So he sits there on the application as if he's them, ask them for their permission. Hey, I'm going to fill out this application for you as we're going through, but there's going to be a lot of questions that like aren't quite clear. Or I'm going to need more information on that. He spends about 25 minutes with every client up front, filling out the online application for them, asking them for their permission to like do the credit authorization, asking them guiding questions when they get into the finances, the debt, the bankruptcy, the alimony. And this dude never, ever loses a client to rate shopping or to a competitor because he built that rapport up front, leads them through the process and educates. So I think that's the way that we can stand out. And, you know, we're going to get to a point in this industry, just like in the tax world, where it's like H&R Block. What's the one that you can do online?
TurboTax.
TurboTax, yeah. We're going to get to a point where 50% of consumers can go through the easy click a button, get a mortgage. The 50% of consumers that have to come through us, we're just going to make more money doing it. Like that, you know, that's how it is. My CPA gets $4,000 or $5,000 a year to file my taxes. Because I have it, it's just complicated enough to not go to TurboTax. Mm-hmm. So it's like 50% of people can do TurboTax for free, and 50% of people are paying now $5,000 a year instead of $500 a year for somebody to file their taxes. And that's kind of just the normal evolution of business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing. I think a lot of people are scared with all the AI coming out that, you know, loan officers are going to be replaced. But the reality is, the way I see it is, first is going to go operations before loan officers, right? Because loan officers drive the market and the marketing and the leads.
Right.
Because relationships are not necessarily going to be replaced anytime soon by learning. You still have to, by like AI, you have to still generate the interest in the product and in yourself. And people always want to have somebody to hang if the process goes wrong or people want to trust in someone.
Right.
And so I don't see that they're like,
they need a leader.
Yeah.
And you know, I get a lot of grief from some friends of mine, because I'll send them book recommendations or podcast recommendations. AI right now is not a thinking, breathing Terminator 2 computer. AI right now is more accurately classified as a large language model, meaning that when you go to ChatGPT and I ask, hey, I want to send a thank you email to Michael for having me on his podcast, script a one paragraph thank you email. That's cool. But all it's doing is it's pulling from a large language model to give me some language to then send to you. Well, if you're well-versed, if you're well-read, we can increase our own large language model, right? So like, instead of listening to Taylor Swift's song for the 100th time, or for me, Led Zeppelin House of the Holy for the 700th time, you know, put on a podcast, put on a business book, right? Try to learn something new. Instead of watching YouTube videos on grizzly bears fighting, which my son and I love, you know, turn on something that's going to educate you about the market. Make sure you're watching Barry Habib's update. Make sure you're reading Mortgage Market Daily, right? Because when people are scared of AI, what they're really scared about is they're scared about their own intellectual limitations. And so work on that, right? Work on yourself. Try to have a larger language model for ourselves. Read more books, devour more podcasts. If you're walking the dog, you know, look, if you're going to wind down and listen to Led Zeppelin or Taylor Swift, by all means, we all need a little bit of a mental reset. I listen to music for at least half an hour a day. But, you know, read a book, right? Pick something up. Educate yourself on what's going on in the market. Educate yourself on how clients want to be spoken to, because then you can become your own AI. Like, The fear about AI, I think, is so overblown. And there's a bunch of coaches that have been in the game for a year, 2 years, 3 years that are just trying to sell product and they're trying to get people. So they're scaring them with like, oh, you don't know how to use AI. You're going to be out of business. Dude, I wish I had it on me. We could post this article from like 1983, 1984, that word for word explained the same thing we're hearing now about how AI is going to put everybody out of business. And it was this thing called DU. It was like, DU is going to eliminate the need for underwriters. Eventually, loan officers are going to be worthless because clients can just go in and run their own underwriting scenario. Like, it was either 84 or 94. I can't remember. DU is going to like end the loan officer and the underwriter. And lo and behold, it made us more value. And so the people that are like fear-mongering to sell product over AI, and come on, it's a tool. People that use the tool will do better, and people that don't know how to use the tool will just find their job harder.
Yeah, but I think that's true in only like the fringe cases too, because people that use the tool, like a lot of the people I see using the tool today are just wasting time.
Yeah.
They think that this is the solution to their lack of production or to their inability to pick up the phone and call somebody and have a conversation or to write their own email.
Here is the solution to your lack of production. Pick up the phone and start dialing. Like, yep. People still value human connection. I don't know if you saw this. We're recording this in late summer 2023. An article just came out that the company Zoom is requiring all their people to report back to the office because you can't build deep relationships over Zoom. And so the company is said, hey, we have this great tool. And if we want to create a cohesive work environment where people trust each other, we need to have people back in the office because you can't build deep relationships over Zoom, right? You can't build deep relationships over Rocket Mortgage or, you know, interject any other tech tool. But what you can do is you can use that as a way to educate the consumer on the fact that they can easily get a loan. And then you call them and you be the person that can lead them, right? Lead, educate, advocate, and delight. And boom. It's like you're surfing off of their momentum.
Yeah, I heard Elon Musk say something a couple months ago that he thought that remote work was unethical. I was like, whoa, this is so weird to think about because everyone's moving that direction. So yeah, I mean, that's very true. I mean, you can't really create a connection that way. It's hard. It's hard to create a connection that way. So you must be good because I feel a connection to you. You must be really good.
I'm just authentic, which, you know, is sometimes a blessing, but sometimes a curse.
So, you know, a lot of things I've been hearing today, too, from loan officers is I hear them say that it's not me, it's the market. I mean, sure, there's less going on, but what, 80,000 people didn't renew their licenses this year? So what's the deal with the market?
I'm about to come up with a Facebook post. Maybe some people will see it by the time this drops. And I'm just going to be like, hey, man, the market's not fucked. I'm fucked, right? And so I feel like there's a lot of loan officers and realtors out there that are creating a lot of fear and anxiety and negativity around the market because our market as loan officers and realtors are screwed. Meaning the consumer cares about one thing. Can I buy a house? And then maybe secondly, will the value of that house go down in the near future if I make a bad financial decision, right? And we have all the stats. Barry Habib's gone over this beautifully. Anybody who's being intellectually genuine, we know the stats that there's way too many buyers, not enough property, and the government continues to subsidize buyers on the demand side, but they're not subsidizing builders on the supply side of the equation. So we just know property values aren't going down. Like old school econ 101 supply demand curve, there's way too much demand for way too little supply. And even with interest rates almost tripling and property values still staying pretty strong, people are finding a way to cobble together homeownership, right? And so, you know, who knows how much elasticity there is in that and how much higher prices or rates can go, but we know that there's not going to be a major crash. What there is going to be is a massive lack of volume of transactions because there's not enough new construction. So many people are locked into their forever house because their interest rate is so low. You know, people are fearful of the market because the Fox News and the MSNBCs, they got to report on something negative to sell ad space. But the reality is, if somebody can afford to buy a home right now, I wouldn't be worried about what property values are going to do. And if they can afford to buy a home right now, they're probably making more money than they ever thought they were going to, right? So it's like, I just want to grab every realtor and loan officer by the throat and be like, stop with the negativity. The market is not screwed. The market is what it is. If there's going to be 4 million purchase transactions this year instead of 5 million purchase transactions this year, That doesn't mean the market's going down. That doesn't mean that prices are going down. That doesn't mean that consumers should be scared about buying a house. That simply means that there's fewer transactions for us to all fight for, right? So you have to fight harder for probably a fewer number of transactions. But the good news is, I always say, like, make it harder, right? Make it harder. Because then the 80,000 people that aren't renewing their mortgage license and the 2 million realtors that aren't going to renew their realtor license, that just means there's going to be more market shares for the people that tough it out. So it's like, people have to make a conscious decision right now. And by the way, I'm not criticizing either decision. There are both fine decisions. If somebody says, hey, I'm done, it's too hard, I can't make the kind of money I'd been accustomed to making in the last 10 years, I'm going to pivot and do XYZ for a job. That's noble. That's noble. Like, if you decide there's a different path for you to provide for you and your family, there is nothing wrong with that. And if you're in it, be in it. Like, no, there's still, yeah, there's not 5 million transactions, there's 4 million transactions, but a top producing loan officer is going to do what, 100 to 200 transactions a year? Are you telling me that like your 100 or 200 are the exact difference of the transactions that disappear between the 4 million and the 5 million delta of like transactions not happening? No, you're just coming up with excuses and complaining. Like, if I'm not doing enough business, it's because I'm not doing the activities. Which, by the way, even as a coach, I own a coaching company and invest in a tech company that we're working on called Fledge, and I do my podcast and I want to do jujitsu with my family. If I'm only doing 3 or 4 deals a month instead of 10 deals a month, that's not because of the market. That's not because of interest rates. That's not because we're only going to have 4 million purchases instead of 5 million purchases. It's because I'm not willing to call 20 people a day instead of 10 people a day. It's because I'm not willing to sacrifice my evenings to go to happy hours and social mixers and stuff because I want to do jujitsu. And that's a personal choice for me. But I don't sit around and be like, well, the market's so hard, there's just not 10 deals a month for me to do. It's like, no, I'll do 3 or 4 deals a month and be very happy and, you know, have other sources of revenue because that's my choice. Anybody that's not doing enough business right now, they either need to reflect on their own skills and say, hey, I need to up my game, I need to get out of the business, or I need to just shut my mouth and do more work because there are deals there. Like, I can't handle the whining. Like, it's like nails on a chalkboard for me when my children whine. They know it. And like, God forbid a coaching client's whines, I just kick them out. I'm like, I don't need your money, man. Like, I can't let you whine and complain.
Yeah, right. That's a bad model match for your coaching program.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your coaching program. Who's a good fit for your business for coaching with you? And like, what are the best success stories?
Yeah. So, you know, if somebody needs to learn the business of being a loan officer, I'm probably not their guy. Like, Zinnix has great programs on like learning how to do the math of being a loan officer. You know, if you're brand new, I would just make the stand that you probably shouldn't try to go be an independent broker. You should probably work for a larger company like Synergy One or Movement Mortgage or New American, where you're going to have mentors and leadership who can help you. We're really good at that loan officer who's core competent. Like, they can structure a deal, they've got a few relationships, they're closing 2 to 4 deals a month, but going from 2 to 4 deals a month to like 8 to 10 deals a month would be life-changing revenue. And there seems to be these numbers, Michael, in the loan officer community, maybe you'll resonate with this, where it's like, the first number of people are like, I just want to make 100 grand doing this job. Mm-hmm. And then depending on the market area you're in and like, you know, inflation and how expensive your neighborhood is, it's like the next number is somewhere between 2 and 250. And they're like, oh, if I could only do 250 a year. And then 250, like a million. People are like, oh, I want to see $1 million on that W-2 or 1099 or whatnot. And so we find like those people that are core competent that are trickling towards, you know, $100,000 a year in income, but they really need some extra help, some technique to get to the 250 or to from the 250 to a million. That's who we can help. And I kind of look at coaching this way. Like, you have to already be the type of person who's willing to take the at-bats and make the calls and do the activities. I'm just going to help you up your batting average. And so if somebody's coming to me and they're like, I have no time management, I won't make the calls, I just like, I fell into this gig where I have one referral source who gives me a deal a month, like, I'm not your guy. If somebody's like, hey, I'm trying, I'm making the calls, but I'm not getting a lot of traction, I'm going to the events, but I don't have a good follow-up, I'm getting some deals in, but I don't have like a systematic way to get the deals through the pipeline, then I'm your guy, right? I'll help you improve your batting average. I don't want to coach people who aren't even willing to step into the box and take a swing.
So you're not the kind of coach who takes people and motivates them to do something they're not doing necessarily. You're the one who takes hungry people and hone their skills and get the incremental improvements so that their batting average goes up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just pick on you for 1 minute because you used my least favorite word in the English dictionary, motivation. Like, nobody's motivated to do this job. From the person who's trying to close one deal this month just to keep food on the table, all the way up to like the people that have mastered this that are doing 400 or 500 deals a month. Nobody woke up this morning and was like, you know what, Michael? You know what I'm super motivated to do today? I want to go look at some 1120Ss. I want to talk to my client about how they're defrauding the government by writing everything off under their corporation. And when I tell them they don't qualify for a loan, they're going to be mad at me. I am so motivated to do that.
Right.
Like, no, nobody's motivated to do that, but we're committed. So it's like, I want to work with those people that are like, I know this is what I need to do. I need you to help me with my commitments. I'm massively in love with jujitsu. I've been doing it for about 3 years. But in the morning, when the alarm goes off at 5 o'clock, I am not motivated to get up and go have Mike Lady, ironically, that one of the toughest guys I know is named Lady, Mike Lady, who's 230 pounds, sit on my chest and try to snap my wrist or my neck. Like, I'm not motivated to do that, but I am really committed to getting better at the art of jujitsu. So I get my ass out of bed, I drag my ass to the gym, and I roll with Mike, who just crushes me every day, right? Same thing in business. Like, nobody's motivated to make these calls. I coach this, I write down the people every Sunday night who I want to call, so I kind of have my first 20 calls kind of planned out for the week. I'm committed to do that thing because it will result in the leads, that results in the deals, that results in the kind of money that I need to take care of my family the way I need to take care of them. And so for me, it's about, hey, this is like commitment training. We can't motivate anybody to do nothing, right? We all know people that have left Tony Robbins and they're like, I'm so motivated. I'm never going to smoke a cigarette again. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to do the Peloton. I'm done with Dr. Pepper. I'm going to be a great dad. And 3 days later, they're sitting on the couch, you know, watching the Steelers game, eating Oreos and Dr. Pepper. I'm speaking about myself, by the way. So it's like motivation is for the birds, but commitment, I think that's what we can get out of like a good coaching program or a good anything program, right? Like, if you want to be the person that starts going to the gym, commit to doing it, lay out the shoes, let, you know, just like you have to commit to doing it. You won't be motivated when the alarm goes off at 4:45 because that is warm. My wife is very cuddly.
Nice. Yeah. Mine's too warm. I can't cuddle with her. So it's like the opposite.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I love it. And any like final thoughts, you know, any takeaways you'd like to leave for our listeners today?
Yeah, man. I would tell people this as a reminder. I think the average household income in America right now is like $67,000. I think I looked this up and the average heart surgeon, the person who literally cuts open your hearts, holds a human beating heart in their hand and replaces valves or does a quadruple bypass or emergency exploratory heart surgery, they make around $300,000 to $350,000 a year. I don't know a lot of loan officers, even the ones that are really struggling, who are making less than $75,000, even in one of the worst markets we've ever seen. So in one of the worst markets we've ever seen, when you're getting kicked in the teeth, you're still making more than the average household does in America. And, you know, whether it was over the couple of years when everybody and their brother was refinancing, or even right now, if you're keeping your head in the game and you're staying committed to the lead generation, I know a lot of loan officers where, you know, let's be honest, man, we educate people about their financial opportunities. We do a little bit of sales and then we shuffle a lot of paperwork. That's not quite as complicated as holding a human heart in your hand.
Right.
And I've got a lot of coaching clients that are going to make more than your average heart surgeon in America. So like for context, even though it's a tough market, even though it's hard out there, even though I'm sympathetic to the fact that we went from two of the best years we've ever seen in the industry to two of the hardest years, I'm sympathetic to all that. We're still amazingly paid for the job that we do. So just commit to doing better, commit to doing more, and stick with it, because the people that are falling out of the industry, all of those deals are going to be there for us, right? Like some arch nemesis of yours who was working with a realtor that you really want to work with, but it was their cousin and their golf partner, they're going to leave the industry. So make the calls, connect with the people who said no to you several times over the last 2, 5, 10, 20 years, because a lot of those people are going to lose their preferred loan officer and you're going to have an at-bat at so many more opportunities in the next couple of years if you just stick with it, right? It's kind of like a poker tournament. For those of you that aren't familiar, like you can't win a poker tournament in the first couple hours of the event, but you can definitely lose and get knocked out. Right now, it's like a poker tournament where if you just keep a few chips in front of you, right? If you just stay alive and you stay in the game, like good things can happen in the fourth quarter. And I mean the fourth quarter of life, maybe the fourth quarter of this year. I don't know. Just make the commitment that you're going to stick with it. If you need coaching, find me. I'm Scott L. Groves on all the social media. I just want the loan officers who are going to make it to succeed, to stick around. And if you need to get out, again, no shame in that. We have great skill sets having worked in the mortgage business of like knowing how to work B2B with realtors and knowing how to work B2C with consumers. Don't sell yourself short if the loan mortgage origination gig didn't work out for you. You have a lot of intrinsic worth and value, and you have a lot of skills that other companies would be hungry for. So make a decision and then go with it, like 110%.
Nice. Shameless plug time. All right, hit us up. What's your book? What's your podcast? Tell us your program again.
Book is Lead Generate, 61 Days to Double Your Pay. Podcast is called On the Edge Podcast with Scott Groves. Not to be confused with the On the Edge podcast about Scientology. That's not me. Coaching is Consolidated Coaching. If you want Michael, my link tree is just Scott L. Groves. That has all the links for everything. And let me know when this is out so I can distribute it
yep.
to all my people on my email list as well.
All right, Scott. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's been awesome. Good to finally meet you. And we'll talk soon.
Great to talk, man.
Take care.